Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods. Today, I'm very proud to bring you Spaced Out with Bob Vossler. Greetings and welcome, Bob. How are you?
Doing fantastic. It is a wonderful, spooky October night, and I'm looking forward to our program this evening.
Me too. You picked a spooky conversation, and you have an excellent guest, Anne-Marie McGinley, who's been here before, and I'm really looking forward to listening in on your conversation.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to it too.
I'll be here if you need me, Bob.
All righty. Thanks. Tonight I decided, in honor of it being October and the season of Halloween and monster movies and all kinds of things that go bump in the night, to talk about, in honor of the premiere of the Chucky TV series that was earlier this week, and I apologize if the noise of my puppies are in the backdrop because they're in the background, they're wondering. But I decided to explore devil dolls in the sense of the various different movies and ghoulish characters that we have seen in movies and TV shows, but mostly movies, where animated either mannequins or dummies or dolls come to life and do so not so nice things. And Anne-Marie, thank you for joining me on this. I know this was a little impromptu this week, but
sure.
As always, you're a trooper to come in and talk horror with me.
I dislike it so much too, you know.
I knew there was an old movie, an old black and white movie that I thought was kind of the start of these kind of mannequin monster kind of characters. But the Devil Doll of 1936 is actually more about a shrinking formula and a guy who escaped from Devil's Island to get revenge. So that really didn't fall into the category, unlike Devil Doll, the British movie of 1964 that has a ventriloquist whose body is, you know, there's an evil soul in the doll and he's trying to get out. So there was that. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
I saw one that was made quite a bit later than that one. And the doll used to say, "Hello, schmucko," and it was a murderous murderous ventriloquist dummy, it was an interesting. It scared the heck out of me. I just remember that, and I'm kind of hard to scare. Sometimes I've seen enough of these that it doesn't really scare me. It might gross me out sometimes, but it doesn't usually scare me. This one scared me. But I think it was a remake of the one you're talking about.
Well, thankfully, the Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone, gave us three very scary animated characters. Probably the best one that that is iconic is Talking Tina from the episode Living Dog. And even Telly Savalas didn't survive that one. And it was a simple idea. It was, you know, like, I think it's really cool that a simple doll could inspire such horror, because Talking Tina, you know, didn't look ghoulish, unlike, say, Annabelle or, you know, Chucky,
right.
we'll get into later. But Tina was a simple doll that you could, you know, from the early 1960s that you could pick up at your Woolworths or your neighborhood store.
Right. Your neighborhood toy store. Just a friendly little doll.
Yeah. Who would talk and, you know, but then she would end up talking and saying some things like, "I don't like you and I'm going to kill you."
To kill you, yeah.
And I think coming from
what looks like such an innocent little doll, you know, it gets really, really creepy fast. And something I didn't know, I found out that the mom in that episode, her name was Annabelle.
Oh, I wonder if that was done deliberately. No, because Annabelle came much later than that.
Yeah, that was much later, but it was, the creepy ending was that the doll tells, you know, the little girl's mother, Annabelle, that you better be nice to me, you know. So, I mean, in a way, the doll rescue, you know, I mean, Telly Savalas doesn't play a very nice guy, you know, he's kind of, you know, not your model husband. Certainly not a good stepfather. You know, Telly Savalas is just not a nice guy. Did he deserve to die or be murdered by, you know, talking Tina? Probably not, but it made for a great story.
And what a thing to be able to tell your grandkids. I was killed by talking Tina.
Yeah, I always, you know, if I ever had the chance to talk to Telly Savalas, I mean, like, this is the guy who played Blofeld in on Her Majesty's Secret Service. Even James Bond bring him down, but Talking Tina did, you know, at least 10 years early. You know, tough guy.
Got to watch them.
And Talking Tina is probably, in all his career, I'm sure Talking Tina is the only one who managed to kill him off. You know, but the Twilight Zone also brought us two dummy characters. One in the episode The Dummy, and Cliff Robertson was the ventriloquist, and that had a pretty chilling ending. I don't know if you remember that one.
No, I don't remember that one. It might have been played on some New Year's Eve when I wasn't all connecting.
Frank Sutton, I believe, played his agent. Frank Sutton being, we would remember him more as Gomer Pyle's sergeant.
Sergeant.
Yeah. But, you know, it appeared that Cliff Robinson was losing his mind and talking to the doll. And the episode in the beginning leaves it very vague as to whether Cliff Robertson is imagining this, or if this dummy is actually coming to life. And Cliff Robertson even replaces the dummy with another dummy, and then in the dark, when he comes back one night to his dressing room in the darkness, he thinks he's killing the other dummy and ends up destroying the replacement. The dummy takes his place, and the most chilling part of it is, if you remember, that in the end, you see the back of the back of the ventriloquist act, and when they pan around to the front, the dummy has become the human being, and Cliff Robertson's character, the dummy now resembles Cliff Robertson's face.
Oh, that's creepy. Creepy.
Very creepy ending. And they followed that up with, a lot of people think that this was a sequel, but it's not. The dummy looked very similar, but it was called Caesar and Me, and Jackie Cooper plays an Irish ventriloquist who's down on his luck, not very successful, and is persuaded by the dummy, who very clearly does talk and gives him instructions and degrades him and persuades him to go and rob the nightclub where he's working. And one of the most interesting things about that episode is a very, very young Morgan Brittany, and she's not even billed as Morgan Brittany. She plays this young girl, Susan. If you don't know Morgan Brittany, she's this beautiful brunette actress who was in a lot of things in the 1980s, and she's best known as her character killed off Bobby Ewing in Dallas.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
She played Bobby's, at that point, ex-wife,
Pam. Yeah.
And actually wanted Bobby, but then Bobby was going to go back to Pam. And then that was the plot device they used, that she plowed into him. Of course, we know he wakes up from the shower, but but it was a really good episode. And she has over time played some very devious characters like that, but no more so than when she was this young girl who is actually, you know, ends up in cahoots with, you know, betrays Jackie Cooper to the police. The police come, and Jackie Cooper says, no, he made me do it. And he's pointing to the doll. And of course the doll remains silent, you know, the dummy remains and makes him, you know, and so the police take him away, and Susan Morgan Brittany lingers. And then of course he talks to her, and he says to her, you know, we can get out of here. We can be a team. Cause she's not happy. She's living with her aunt. And he even says, you know, you could kill off your aunt, you know, with these poison darts. The ghoulish part is not the dummy, but they close up on her and she's smiling like,
I've always found it interesting that they call them dummies, because in this particular genre, they're never dumb. They're never dumb at all. They're actually very intelligent and obviously devious. So it's an interesting term instead of ventriloquist doll. They call them dummies, and I thought that was just real interesting in that. Ironic.
No. They, you know, it's usually the victims who do the dumb things, like, you know.
It's true.
Follow what the doll said. Yeah. Not realizing that the dolls are alive or, you know, manipulating them.
It's similar to the young female teenagers in their underwear running into the woods.
Yeah.
Don't think about why. It just is.
There's a great commercial running now, and it ran last year too. I don't know how long it's been going on. I think it's Geico, your favorite insurance company.
Yes.
They're running around and they're saying, you know, like, why don't we go into the car? You know, the running car.
Yes, there's a running car. Why don't we use that? And everybody.
And instead, they're like, no. Let's hide in the shed where all the knives and then they bring out something that looks a little like Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th. He takes his mask off and he's looking up at the ceiling like, how dumb are these kids, you know? I think that's hysterical. But let's see. One of my favorite movies, and I'm going to put the devil doll into this category because he literally is a devil doll. Have you ever seen the movie? It was a TV movie in the early to mid 1970s. It was directed by Dan Curtis, best known for Dark Shadows and directing the pilot for Kolchak, the Night Stalker. And I believe he owns the rights to Kolchak, the Night Stalker, but had very little to do with the TV series. But it was a TV movie called The Trilogy of Terror.
I know that little doll. That spooky little thing, even when it doesn't do anything. Kind of like a possessed tiki something.
Yes, he was a Zuni fetish doll. And I'll tell you, when I saw that movie for the first time as a kid, and he suddenly came to life, that actually got me, I won't say scared, but I was like startled. I was like, oh my God, you know, because it was very realistic even for that time. And it was a surprise. I don't know what I expected, but I didn't expect him to just come to life like that. And they did a really good job on that. And I remember poor Karen Black, who was in that particular movie. She played three different parts in three different stories within that movie. And she plays this woman who I guess, brought the doll back or was given the doll. I haven't seen the movie in a long time. I hope they rerun it sometime this month.
I think she brought it back from wherever she went to visit, or I can't remember exactly why she was in a different place, but she brought it back as like a souvenir or something. Which, why would you even want to be associated with that thing anyway?
Yeah, he's kind of creepy all by himself, even without moving. I mean, yeah, I would want him, but, you know, as we know, my wife would not let me, you know.
But Emily wouldn't even let you in the house if you had that.
That is true. Yeah. But I remember Karen Black's character captures him by putting him in the suitcase. But even in the suitcase, I think he's got a knife, and he cuts through the suitcase or something. But I forgot how it ended. But it was out of all those the three segments. If you ever mention the movie, the Trilogy of Terror, that's the one everybody remembers. That's on the, you know, when we had VHS, that was on the VHS cover. It's probably on the DVD cover. It's on Wikipedia when you look it up. And something I did not know, and I would, or forgot, that there was a Trilogy of Terror. That one came out, the original came out in 1975. This second one came out in 1996, and had one of the three segments was a sequel to the most popular segment, which of course was our Zuni fetish doll. He was back, and they did the same formula. Dan Curtis had directed it as well, and he brought, instead of Karen Black, a British actress named Lizette Anthony would play the female lead, who would be in the three different stories. And she plays a doctor who, of course, is stalked by the fetish dolls. And she does the same thing Karen Black does by putting him in some kind of suitcase or container. And, of course, he's got a knife and does the same exact thing.
And does that. Yeah, because people don't ever learn. You know?
No, no. From
the thing
being,
has
you know,
a knife. Leave it alone.
And in researching this, when I read the name Lizette Anthony, I'm like, I know who Lizette Anthony is because I had the honor of meeting her.
She played
Angelique in the remake of Dark Shadows. So obviously Dan Curtis, I don't recall when the new Dark Shadows came out. It was either before or after this movie, but obviously he liked Lizette Anthony, who in eight episodes of the new Dark Shadows took Laura Parker's part of Angelique and brought her, you know, in this version, and I had forgotten this too, she was, she spoke with a French accent because really Angelique was French. She was she had been taught her zombie, you know, her voodoo, witchcraft from, I guess, in France before she came to America. And anyway, I remember her, at the convention, she was very articulate, very bright, and very beautiful. And she, you know, I never thought anybody could do Laura Parker's part of Angelique better than Laura Parker. And I still think Laura Parker was better. But I will say Lizette Anthony did a darn good job in that part. But
yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Someday I'll do a whole spaced out on segment on Dark Shadows itself, because that's definitely worth a visit.
But that show, and you could do 5 hours on that. Such an interesting show.
Yeah. And I know there was, you know, to digress just a little, I know that there was another, I think CW had done a pilot. This is before the movie came, you know, out, because at one time CW was trying to bring Dark Shadows back again for another TV series, and the pilot is available on YouTube. It was not picked up, which is a shame, because it, you know, for some reason they had the actress who played Victoria Winters, they made her a blonde with short hair. I'm not sure why, but I will say that the pilot, the first episode was very well done, and it, you know, of all the remakes, and I'm not a big fan of remakes, as you know, but I would say, you know, that was worth, you know, it's too bad that didn't get a green light to go further, because I think I think it would have been worth, you know, exploring. And I think the CW does horror very well with
Yes, I do too.
You know, with their legacies, with their Vampire Diaries, with their, you know, a little show like Supernatural that was on for, mm-hmm. what, 50 years. I think they could have done Dark Shadows, the TV series, justice, but, you know. Maybe
and,
at some
yeah,
point.
Because they are so good with this genre. They are so good with it. Just consistent with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a shame. If you get a chance, I'm sure it's floating around on YouTube. It's worth an hour. No commercials, I think, you know. But they did a fairly good job with casting and everything. I'm still a big Dark Shadows fan. And, you know,
oh, yeah.
I will do it. An episode of that.
I remember running home from school real fast because Dark Shadows came on, and the original one came on in the afternoon with the regular soap operas. But I remember running home because we had to watch Dark Shadows. And of course, we couldn't watch, us kids couldn't be all in front of one TV. We had to be in front of our individual TV.
Right.
Which was pretty funny.
Right. It was just a classic show, and the idea of doing it as a soap opera where they could really explore, you know, the gothic romance, you know, because the show was slated to be canceled, and then they decided to bring in Barnabas, you know, and then it was like,
it was wonderful.
It was like, oh, nope, we're keeping the, you know, the ratings just shot up and
just shot up, yeah. Yeah,
you know,
because then it started to become something other than the soap opera.
Yeah, I mean, I think they may have done a ghost story before that or what, but, you know, it was not it really wasn't catering to horror as much. It was almost starting off as your standard soap opera of the time, and, you know,
right.
And then it
right.
just evolved into something really cool.
And kind of surprising to be in that time slot in the afternoon to have some kind of horror thing going on was kind of unusual.
I remember I only saw maybe one or two episodes because, you know, as a kid I was at school, or maybe I just got out of school, or, you know, I didn't know about it, or I'm sure I would have. But I remember later NBC began running the reruns of the soap opera. And that was on in the afternoons as well, before the news like took over the later, I think, I don't know, 3 o'clock, something like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
So, that's where I got more of a taste for it and watched it more consistently. And then eventually even Sci-Fi Channel started to run it and, you know, I never watched the show Goosebumps. Did you ever see the Goosebumps?
I haven't actually seen it, but I know about it. I just haven't actually seen the show.
I never did either, but a kind of a mannequin dummy type character called Slappy was well known on the Goosebumps. That was one of the characters that, you know, falls into our Talking Tina, Annabelle type.
And the schmucko one somewhere. That's funny. That's what I remember about the whole thing was this dummy calling the other guy, hey, schmucko. But it was real. I mean, while we laugh now, it was really creepy in the movie.
Yeah. And then I completely forgot this one too, because I remember seeing the Poltergeist, the original Poltergeist, and you know, and the music in that is just fantastic too. It's everything
mm-hmm.
sets the mood
yes.
very well. And the clown, Poltergeist, the young boy, you know, because I believe it's the young girl that we focus most on.
Right.
But it's her little brother who has the clown who was underneath the bed and is, you know, is pretty scary. So I had forgotten about that. But he was another one of those characters. And I don't follow the Saw franchise. I don't think I've ever seen an episode of Saw. I think that goes a little too sadistic
yes,
for me.
That's why I didn't watch it either. And I think it was more, for me, it seemed to be more of a, a slice and dice movie rather than something that has a substantial plot.
Yeah, it seems like it puts the, you know, the victims into a situation where they've got to do things that I really don't want to watch. And I feel bad for them. And, you know, it's a little different than, you know, than some of the other franchises, but you know, even though they have, you know, grisly murders too.
Right.
Saw has the character of Billy, who's that weird puppet creature that apparently works for or is the servant of the main sadistic guy who puts these scenarios together. I don't know because, you know, I as I said, I don't watch it. You haven't watched it, but I guess Billy does fall into the same category of creepy doll who is not very and,
creepy doll with a knife.
Yeah, any creepy doll with a knife. And then there's the I don't know if you remember from the 1980s, and I believe the production company was called like Blue Moon or New Moon or
That sounds familiar. Blue Moon sounds familiar.
I think it was Blue Moon. They did the Puppet Master series.
Oh yes, yes.
Which I can't say that I followed them consistently, but I used to catch them on, you know, Sci-Fi Channel or I don't know, late night, you know, USA channel used to have. Who is the blonde TV hostess? Not Elvira, of course, but she was a blonde, and she was the sort of the horror movie hostess back in the 80s, 90s, and I think they ran them on that channel a lot. So
but that was before I was a horror fan, so.
They were interesting.
I'm only a horror fan since I met you, Bob.
Yeah, I bring out the horror in people. They were kind of quirky in that they had weird looking characters and they would move, you know, it'll almost look like, you know, stop motion animation, which I guess that's what they were. I mean, it was kind of before CGI took over and, you know, there was a whole, you know, series of them. And I think one even spun off into his own movie or something like that. But, you know, they kind of fall into that, you know, our category. And, you know, before we get to Annabelle, do you actually more recently, Brahms from The Boy. And I was thinking about this movie. I think as creepy as the doll looked in the first movie, I believe that Brahms, and the whole idea is that an elderly couple they're elderly now, but they lost their son. And they treat the doll as they would their son, and they bring in a young person played by the actress who plays Maggie on The Walking Dead. And she takes care of, you know, because they're going away on vacation or just going away, and she is to take care of the doll, and you know, she thinks she's a governess. That she's taking over in this beautiful, secluded mansion, because that's where it would, of course, have to be held. And she thinks that she's going to take care of a boy, and then she's introduced to, you know, a boy that's basically a, you know, looks like a China mannequin, a doll.
Oh,
and the doll,
I do remember that one. Yes,
The doll moves around, you know, but doesn't actually move around. She thinks, like, why? I put the doll here. There's nobody in the house, and the doll's moved. And she
and it would be in a different place. Yeah.
Yeah, and bringing her.
Yeah,
voice.
I remember
so,
that.
You know, it was a nice misdirection because you're thinking that this thing is, you know, and you keep on wanting to see it move on itself, but it's just hinted at.
Right.
And at the very end of the movie, you realize that the boy never died. The boy is hidden within the house, and he's not a boy. He's grown up at this point, and he's moving the doll around because he has access to various entry points in the house, and there's a whole big battle. So I know they did a sequel to it more recently, and it dawned on me that I never got around to seeing the sequel. So I guess that's something I got to get from the library.
What's fascinating about these is how they keep the suspense up, because that's very difficult in a movie to keep suspense going there. And these it's fascinating that that's the common besides the doll, that's the common denominator in all of these movies. It's just keeping it suspenseful. So even someone like you who's been accustomed to horror movies for forever, I mean, even you jump at things.
Yes, like I did with the Zuni fetish doll when I was younger, and one of the other times I recall, and I think they did a wonderful job with the atmosphere of this, was a movie, and unfortunately the name escapes me, or I would look it up, but it was only a few years ago. And it was it might be the doll maker, or there was a whole room full of these dolls.
I was going to mention that because I remember that, but I couldn't remember the name of it.
Well, I know,
creepier and creepier.
It was a very creepy movie. It was filled with atmosphere. And now I can't think of the name of it. But it was very well done, but I also can't recall the plot, but just the atmosphere of it and this separate house where the dolls were, and they had to go back.
Yeah.
And you didn't even need to see them move. It was just so creepy in just seeing these.
And if we're talking about the same one, it was like sometimes I can't even remember if it was a woman or a man, but I tend to think it was a woman, would look at the doll, look away, and when she looked back again, it'd be in a different position. If that's the same one that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Very creepy.
Yeah. It was very well done. And it wasn't that long ago. I'm thinking maybe within the last 5 years, maybe.
Yeah, I'm thinking that too.
But maybe we should move on to the master of the well, actually, there's two. There's a king and a queen. There's Chucky, of course, who began in Child's Play. And I don't know how many Chucky movies there are, but it's been a phenomenal that, you know, Child's Play, Child 2, and then I think. And
then the whole bunch of Chucky Bride of Chucky and –
Seed of Chucky, Cult of Chucky, you know, Chucky's all over the place. And I read something where they realized that the franchise, there's only so much you can do with a, you know, a killer doll after so many movies.
Right.
And they started to exhaust the whole thing because, you know, the little kid grows up, he's in a military school, you know, and there's that episode. Or that there's that movie, and then of course they decided, let's camp it up a little bit, let's make it a little bit funny, and brings in Tilly. What's the name of the actress? I'm having a brain. His girlfriend, who becomes his bride
you know, like she added a whole other element to it, and she's going to be in the series too. And it was, you know, it just added so much to that. And, you know, right down to them having a little feud, you know, after they, you know, they have sex. I mean, the two dolls have sex. It's like, it's ridiculous. And
yeah.
then the next scene, as ludicrous as that is, then there's a scene of a couple in a bed and the doll hits, you know, they have a big mirror above them and the doll hits on the ceiling and all the glass comes down and just kills their victims. I mean, you know, there's violence and then there's fun and there's, you know, and dark humor and, you know, and grisly murder is, you know, amazing.
Something akin to Nightmare on Elm Street, where Freddy has this really unusual sense of humor. But there's some humor in those, too.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that was the route that Nightmare took. In fact, just before we started, Sci-Fi Channel was running the tail end of Freddy Krueger, or the second Nightmare on Elm Street, which I think was the least except, you know, like was the worst of the movies because they tried to do it in reverse. They tried to bring Freddy into the real world and they realized that was the direction they wanted to go to. And I think it's universally accepted that the third movie was the one that sort of put them in the direction that they needed to go with more humor, more outlandish special effects, the sarcasm of Freddy Krueger and all that. And I think in much the same way, they decided to make Chucky, you know, kind of a little Freddy Krueger in the sense that they went with his sarcasm, his humor, put him in crazy situations, brought in a son for him. You know, there were scenes with the doll that peed himself. You know, has been going on the Sci-Fi Channel in honor of the new series. And you know, they've been running all the movies. So I've had glimpses here and there and remembering things because I pretty much saw all of them at one point. Now, even the remake, they tried to reboot completely. And it was more like a sci-fi movie. It has nothing to do with the Chucky continuity other than it being, you know, the good guy doll.
Chucky. Right.
They made Chucky have artificial intelligence, you know, like an artificial brain, you know, within the dolls. And they were programmed, and then there was a virus within the program or something like that. It was well done, but obviously it was not the Chucky that we all love and fear.
And there's kind of something about a possessed doll that's a lot scarier than an AI doll.
Right. It sort of lost the point. It just like, well, you know, it was cute, but they didn't even need to have it as Chucky. They could have just done it as a separate thing if they were going to go that direction because it was clearly more of a sci-fi. But I was glad to see that, you know, Chucky would, you know, the original Chucky would come back. I never thought we would see Chucky, though. I never thought we would see Chucky as a TV series.
No, but now that I watched the first one.
Yeah. I not that it hasn't been done before, because in the 80s, the early 90s, we saw Freddy Krueger had his, you know, at the height of his popularity with those movies, Freddy Krueger had Freddy's Nightmares or something like that. In the sense that Freddy was the host of anthology horror, and he would introduce this. You know, like it would be the Tales of Horror in Springwood, where the movie series is set, and there would be different horror, you know, stories that would go on, sort of, you know. And of course, Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger made a perfect horror host, and it didn't really contradict it didn't contradict the continuity of the, because it didn't
focus on him so much because he's a dream character. So it almost made sense that he would be aware of all these other ghoulish things happening.
Right.
But how are they going to do this with Chucky? And we got a glimpse on Tuesday night of, so what did you think?
Really liked it. And I'm not a big fan of the Chucky movies, but this show I really liked because I can see the potential in it. This premiere kind of at the end put Chucky in the role of defender of the boy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Now we're going to go after that snotty girl, you know.
Yeah, I kind of like the fact that he was that we have a young teen boy who has been abused. He's been, you know, this was his uncle, and when I saw the scene, you know, spoiler alert, people that are listening, you know, when the drunken uncle is, or was that his father? I don't remember.
I think it was his father.
Is destroying the sculpture that he's been making. You know, granted, the kid is a, you know, some would say a little weird, but I mean, he's creative. He's shy. He's, you know, he's growing up. He's, you know, he's the embodiment of a teen that's awkward and, you know,
kind of nerdy and
nerdy.
Yeah.
Everything like that. But you and I think most of us immediately feel for somebody like that because it brings back memories of our own, you know, schooling and when we didn't exactly fit in or fit in it because school can be scary, you know.
Right.
Populated. And you and I grew up before the advent of social media and all that kind of aspect of
things. Oh, now it must be even worse. You can't get away from it now.
Yeah. Things were bad enough just by the speed of the rumor mill, you know, of things, you know. But now with Facebook. So, I thought it was a very good opening. And, you know, and Chucky takes on the role of defender. And I found myself, you know, when the young girl is waiting for the principal to come in, and Chucky's actually moving and stuff and starting to scare her, gotta say, I'm actually like, yeah, Chucky, you know.
Yeah, I liked Chucky. I'm not sure if we're supposed to or if that was intentional or if that was just now he's going to kind of be a hero, which would be an interesting take on Chucky.
Well, I would put him into the anti-hero category of like, you know, I mean, I still think he's a villain, but I think he's going to do some things that we actually root for him for. You know, I'm glad he didn't kill her because she's going to have a larger role. And I don't think he intended to kill her. I think he totally intended to scare her, which clearly
because
she quickly, you know, took down the GoFundMe page joke thing that he had.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And then we see the big showdown in the high school auditorium where there's the talent show.
Oh yes.
So I thought that was very cool, and the fact that, you know, he's been going through her photo album and all this kind of stuff and totally embarrasses her, and she deserved it. What I didn't foresee is the, you know, the electrocution of the father.
The father, yeah. And they did as much as they could on a TV show. As opposed to that, you would have seen the whole thing in the movie, but that was good. And again, another person that we were rooting for, Chucky, kill this person, please kill him.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So we're seeing a little bit like, look, kid, you know, I love the fact that in the episodes to come, we're going to learn more about, you know, as much as the modern time, you know, as much as we're going to see the current storyline evolve, we're also going to go back and find out more about Chucky's real persona, which I believe his name is, was it Billy Ray J or Billy Ray?
something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Find out more about the psycho killer.
Yeah.
Who basically Chucky became.
Yeah. Cause I didn't realize, or maybe I had forgotten that I knew Chucky's character was a criminal, that he's a violent criminal, but I didn't know he was like a serial killer either. So I think they're going to expand on that, and we're going to probably see some flashbacks and
Which I love that kind of stuff. When you make the character deep enough, you go into the background of the character. I mean, gets even better and better.
Exactly. And they did that over the course of the movies with Freddy Krueger. Having the actor, who originally played him, without the makeup,
Right.
I'm happy that they're going to do that, and they kept the original voice for Chucky.
Which is great. That kind of Brooklyn, come out and play.
Yeah.
Want to play? or maybe it's a Sopranos kind of accent to it. It's a Jersey accent, because we always get beat up for stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, and they gave him a town, too. I don't recall in the past. Or maybe I just didn't pay close enough attention, but he's in Hackensack, and immediately I thought,
yeah,
New Jersey?
Is in New Jersey. Yeah, it was Hackensack.
Is it Hackensack, New Jersey, or it could be, I don't know, but we'll find out. It would, if anybody should lay claim to Chucky, I guess it would be either New York or New Jersey.
New Jersey, we collect characters like that. So we have the Jersey Devil and all that other kind of stuff. So,
oddly enough, Haddonfield, New Jersey, while it was Haddonfield, Ohio, that was Michael Myers' hometown, but they inspired because Deborah Hill, who was the co-creator with John Carpenter of Michael Myers in the Halloween series, they had a connection with Haddonfield.
Oh, cool.
So in a way, that kind of inspired, that, which is where they got the name from. But I think it was meant to be, it wasn't meant to be Haddonfield, New Jersey, but they borrowed the name and used it for the fictional town of where Michael Myers lived. So, that was
another
cool.
Great series, to be discussed at a different time. But that's another great franchise.
Coming out this Friday.
Can't wait for that.
Yep. Halloween Kills. So, and then we have, I'm sure where Chucky. I'm not sure where Chucky's going, but wherever it is going, it's going well, because I think they showed scenes from the next several episodes, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see where they go with that.
They seem to have a lot of creativity in it, rather than just, because I thought, how can you do Chucky on a TV show? A series over and over and over. I mean, because after a while, as with some of these franchises that went on beyond what they should go on, where it just becomes, you're going to hack people up again. Big deal.
Right. And it seems like, this will be just a very long horror movie but they'll have time to develop the characters. It won't be the typical the teens are having sex, they're going to die, or the dumb security guard or principal or something like that. You're going to see,
Right.
Now, I don't know if you follow the Conjuring movie franchise or if you've seen any of the spinoff movies that brought us Annabelle, because Annabelle was so successful in, I mean, the first time we see Annabelle, she's in a display case and we don't even get to see much of her. And, but it inspired so much that Annabelle gets her own series. I mean, you know, her own little spinoff horror series. And Annabelle's pretty scary. And she's, she, much like Chucky, who was based on the, some kind of Robert doll, Annabelle was based on a doll that was actually, you know, from the couple who do serious paranormal investigations and do collect the artifacts that are cursed, was actually a simply a Raggedy Ann doll. But when they did the movie, well, nobody's going to be afraid of an, you know, Raggedy Ann doll. But apparently it was a Raggedy Ann doll that was haunted, or, you know, the spirit or a demon or whatever. And that's the, you know, the real life couple that it's based off of, the, you know, the, when they captured the doll, you know, it was Raggedy Ann.
Right.
So, and most people these days probably don't even remember Raggedy Ann. Or, you know,
I remember Raggedy Ann, but, you know, I'm as old as I am. I remember I was one of these children that was just a pain in the neck because I remember taking all the clothes off of my Raggedy Ann doll, and she had a big heart on her chest where a heart, where your heart would be, that said, "I love you," or something like that. But I was always curious what's under the clothes. You know, I was a lovely child.
I think it's good we all do that. I mean, you know, I remember my mother collecting some, you know, she gave a doll to our cousin, and it was a Raggedy Ann. I think, you know, that was something that my cousin quickly did, was take the clothes off, and, you know, we did, she did discover that she had a heart, just like you said. But Annabelle was pretty scary looking. That's a doll where, you know, you wouldn't just have this doll and, you know, even if it wasn't.
And be surprised.
You know. So that has been very popular. I think I saw one of those recently, too, several months ago, because I, you know, I just love the Conjuring series. That's been one of the better franchises.
Was that the one that we went to see recently with Joyce?
So. Yeah, the three of us did see that. We seemed to love horror, and that was definitely, you know, they did a good job on that. I think Annabelle may have done a cameo in that one, didn't she? She was in the display.
Oh, yes. I remember you saying that.
Yeah. And I think I told you the story that while it's not haunted, I rescued a wooden, it's not quite a doll, but it's not quite a mannequin, it's not quite a dummy, but it was a hand-carved doll that looked like a grandma, and I saw it in the dumpster. This was years ago. This was years ago when my wife and I, you know, Emily and I were living at the apartment, and I one day came out and I saw this, and I'm like, it's you know, it was sitting there. It was almost like somebody had put it there for somebody to find on the top of the heap in the dumpster. So me being a dumpster diver, I decided, I've got to rescue Grandma here. And I brought it in and I put it on the, you know, cleaned it up a little bit. I realized that two fingers were maybe broken or missing, and I guess that's why They didn't want it anymore. But I thought, well, you know, Granny must have just, you know, lost her two fingers in the oven or something. So I put it, I sat the doll down in the, you know, in the living room. And when Emily came home, you know, I just wanted to see how long it would take Emily to see that Grandma was there. And
probably not long.
Not long. And she looked over and said, "That's creepy. Where did you get that?" I rescued her from the dumpster. She's great. She's going to watch the house while we're out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that didn't last long. It was like, bring that back. Bring that, either put that back in the dumpster or bring it to the bungalow and put it somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Don't have it anywhere here. So, yeah, so it's somewhere up in the attic. The granny survived, but, you know, she's creepy looking.
Wow.
She's a little creepy.
I hate to intrude, but we have like 4 minutes left, and I want to make sure both of you get your contact info out. Thanks for this. I'm a big fan of the devil dolls you talked about, and I remember being in grammar school and rushing home to watch Dark Shadows every day, too. So thank you for bringing back those memories.
Thank you, Hercules. Well,
thank you, Hercules.
I can be reached at USSChallenger.org and Region7.com, and my email address is beamaboard@AOL.com, and that's how you can reach me. And I would appreciate anybody listening out there to let me know what you think of the show. I was thinking I may even create my own spaced out email address and get some feedback.
Awesome.
You know, good or bad, you know, let me know what you think of this this podcast that comes out once a month by courtesy of Hercules, who's kind enough to let me prattle on with the kind guests that I get, like Anne Marie, to join me.
I'm greatly honored.
And I am Anne Marie. I'm with the USS Britannic, which is part of Starfleet International Fan Club Incorporated. The Britannic is based in Long Island, New York, and we meet once a month. And you can find us on that same place, region7.org. We're also listed there and all the details of when we meet and who to contact.
Thank you so very much. And just to remind everybody, we're launching a brand new show later this month, which will explore the Star Trek and other science fiction universes from an Olympian perspective. And I'm looking forward to having both of you on. Thank you very much for that as well.
Nice.
We look forward to it.
Yes.
And thanks to everybody who tuned in from home, whether you dialed in and you waited in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is all of us wishing all of you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And in the minute or so we have remaining, we're going to end with If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackland. Thanks again, guys.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you can dream. When love and trust